And welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Brian Roach, sitting in from WGAL-TV, filling in for Scott Lamar today. One out of every four adults does not plan for retirement, according to a recent survey of American workers. Roughly 25% of Americans plan to continue working past the age of 65. The question is, do they want to continue working, or do they need to keep working because they are not financially prepared? Why more people are working past retirement age and the mental and physical challenges they face by working into their golden years. My guests today are Andy Sorgel, a journalism fellow with AP NORC, the National Opinion Research Center for Public Affairs Research at the University of Chicago. He's joining us by phone. Thank you, Andy, for joining us. Can you hear us?
I can, yes. Thanks so much for having me.
My other guests today are Dr. Noel Ballantyne, who's an internal medicine physician with a specialty in geriatric medicine from Penn State Health, Milton Hershey Medical Center. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
And Rick Rogers, financial retirement specialist and president of Rogers & Associates, located in Lancaster County. Good morning, Rick. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. It's great to be back on the show.
Andy, I want to start with you. We are pretty much basing our discussion on a survey that your organization just completed earlier this year involving retirement and people who are planning to do it and people who are putting it off for the time being. Tell us a little bit about this survey that was conducted.
Sure. So we put the survey out in February, and one of the main takeaways we found is that the concepts of retirement, of aging, of working longer, pretty widely based on individuals' age, background, income, industry. But really what we did find, which was, context of the retirement discussion, about 23% of folks said they just don't plan to retire. And there are a couple different reasons for that. Some may be financial. Some may be they just enjoy working. I think where there is a disconnect, though, that we also found is when folks actually retire. A lot of folks are living and saving like they might be able to remain in the workforce indefinitely, but we've certainly found through some of our discussions and through some other research that oftentimes when folks leave the workforce, it may not necessarily be of their own volition, maybe a layoff, maybe a health complication. So there is a little bit of a disconnect there that I think can create some financial tension, especially as folks get older.
We're going to dig into the survey through the next hour or so, but what was the big surprise that you found in this survey?
Well, I think to a certain extent, the sheer number is I kind of referenced this disconnect. So 37% of folks that we talked to said they either never plan to retire or will retire after the age of 70. When we looked at, we spoke to current retirees as well. 75% of the folks that we talked to retired prior to turning 66. So there really is a gap here between folks believing that they'll just be able to work indefinitely or have to work indefinitely and when they'll actually be able to retire. We found especially young respondents were a lot more pessimistic about this idea of retirement at the age of 65, that they'd have to work much longer. Certainly folks are living longer now, so maybe retirement at that age doesn't make sense for some folks anymore. But just the sheer disconnect between, when folks are choosing to walk away from the workforce or when folks are having to walk away from the workforce and when some younger generations are saying, they believe they'll be able to walk away. It really seemed to be two different mentalities there.
So let me bring in my other two guests and ask them for their reflections on this. First of all, Rick, you have been a financial planner for, let's just say, a while, decades.
Yes.
Does any of this surprise you to be hearing this, that people are changing their plans for retirement?
No. I think it's always, for everybody, it's a plan that continually develops, so it's somewhat of a moving target. So when we're at 40, we think that we want to retire, and once we reach 60, a lot of things can change, and certainly family dynamics is one of those, health concerns. Do I like my job? Do I hate my job? Financial, of course, is the easy one. That's the one I get to address because that's sort of a math issue at that point, is whether or not you've saved enough. But the surveys that are put out by various organizations consistently show that people aren't saving enough for retirement. And the last one that I saw on the retirement confidence survey was that 55% of workers, and that would be all ages, have less than $50,000 saved for retirement. $50,000 doesn't go very far in retirement. And so the objective for anyone that's in that situation asking for my advice would be you need to work to 70 so that you can at least max out your Social Security, and that will carry you much further.
Money is one part of the aspect, very important part of the aspect. Mental health and physical health and well-being, Dr. Ballantyne, you deal with this on a daily basis. How much of a role does this play into it? How is this changing people's attitudes toward retirement?
In general, people are living to be longer or older now than they used to, and it clearly comes into play. People have to plan that when they retire, they may get to 85, 90 years old easily. They didn't see that coming 20 years ago, 40 years ago.
No.
40 years ago, when I started practice, a 65-year-old was an old person.
Not now.
No.
My dad just last week, my dad turns 85 next week, and he hit me with the old speech last week. If I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. How many times have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard it a billion times. At the same time, you know, I think as a physician, what I want to do to keep my patients aging successfully is to start very early, much like the financial end of things. If you don't take care of yourself in your 40s and 50s, you're not going to be healthy enough to stay in the workforce or have a good quality of life, whatever you do.
And there's a lot of emotional challenges. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Andy, I want to get back to you. You know, I have your survey here in front of me, a lot of great information, a lot of statistics, but I'm not going to go through them bit by bit. But what I wanted to ask you about, differences in demographics that you saw in this survey, what were the major differences between, say, ethnic groups, urban versus rural? What were the big differences you saw there in terms of who wants to retire and when they want to retire?
Well, so I think one of the I think two of the main kind of demographic splits we saw were along racial lines and along socioeconomic lines. So white respondents tended to be more likely to say the economy was currently in good shape, and they were much more likely to say that they felt extremely or very financially prepared for retirement. About 27% of white respondents said this versus 10% of black respondents and 9% of Hispanic respondents. So you see certainly, you know, a great deal of pessimism there. And perhaps unsurprisingly, along socioeconomic lines, what we really saw was the more money you make, the folks who made, you know, six figures annually were much more likely to say that things were currently going well, that they feel a lot better about their retirement prospects than folks who, say, made less than $30,000 in a year.
Let's talk about age differences. You touched on this earlier when we started the show. You said that younger workers were a little more pessimistic or a lot more pessimistic?
Younger workers were certainly more pessimistic about their prospects for retiring early. We also found, interestingly enough, that younger respondents were much more likely to say that the aging workforce, that folks remaining in the workforce longer, was a negative for themselves, for the economy. And so that was something that was a little surprising to us. It's in some sense a macro versus micro economic story. I mean, the experts will tell you that the more folks are working, the better it is for the economy, the more jobs will be available. But if you're in one company and there's one VP of marketing who is 75 and shows no sign of walking away, the folks underneath that person might say, oh, well, you know, there's limited opportunity for me to move up. Expert would probably say, well, there's another comparable job somewhere else. But again, we found younger folks to not only be more pessimistic about the concept of retirement, but about the concept of folks remaining in the workforce longer.
Yeah, you're reading my mind. That was my next question. There was a lot of, I don't want to say negative response, but not positive response from younger workers about older workers staying in the workplace. Did they feel that at a certain point, everybody should just be pushed out the door? Poor choice of words.
So in talking with folks, I think the idea, two schools of thought really kind of came up as I was speaking with some of the respondents. One was, yes, just this idea that folks are kind of clogging up opportunities for them. Another interpretation of folks working longer is because they absolutely have to. And that's bad news, is that, you know, some of these, folks in their 20s and 30s think, gosh, you know, I don't really want to work until I'm 80. Maybe they don't like what they're doing now. So there are, you know, there were a couple different, there were a couple of different interpretations there. But no, by and large, the younger folks were certainly, they were also more pessimistic, perhaps understandably, about their own financial wherewithal. We asked folks, you know, no matter how far out retirement is, how comfortable do you feel about saving for it? Younger folks were much more likely to say they were not very comfortable at all with their prospects.
And Rick, or I'm sorry, Andy, as you're saying that our financial advisor, Rick, is nodding his head, are you surprised to hear that younger people might be pessimistic about this?
Yes,
you know, in some go ahead.
No, go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, in some sense, I'm not, but Ricky, I'm sure you can answer this better than I can.
Were you nodding your head up and down or side to side?
Well, I think my sense is that somebody who's 20, what is their concept of retirement? Yeah, that's something old people do. I don't want to do that. Uh-huh. You know, I don't want to be old now. Maybe on a conscious level, they're not thinking that, but unconsciously, and your perspective is going to change from your time you're 20 to your 30, your 40, your 50, and 60. The fact that they're pessimistic about it, you know, we all know that Social Security is not on a stable footing, and that's going to have to change in some form. We don't know what that's going to take, and so maybe we're not thinking about that. Pensions have been on the way out for some time. Can't afford. Most companies are getting rid of their pensions, and now I'm going to have to save on my own. So there's a lot of things that have been happening that could be affecting our 20-year-olds and our 30-year-olds.
When you use the word retirement with a 27-year-old, you might as well be talking about outer space, because that's right. Not a concept that they can grasp. I have all my children are 30 and under, and mm-hmm. when I talk to them about that, they just roll their eyes and walk away. It's just not something you can get them to think about.
That's why I talk to the young people about financial independence. Let's work towards, from a financial standpoint, let's get to the point where we don't have to work for money. Now you may want to work because you enjoy what you're doing, or you don't have to work for in a certain profession that you're not as happy about, but there's something else that you want to do. And somebody in their 20s can get behind financial independence. That sounds fun. Retirement, that sounds like something old people do.
Exactly. Andy, I want to get back to you because Andy's only with us for about a half hour of our show today. One other very interesting thing I saw in this survey, when you asked workers, and I'm paraphrasing your question, of course, is who might need accommodations to work at home, a computer, or special time off? Tell us what the answer was there. Which age group needed more accommodations?
The younger folks certainly took advantage of it more, and I think that's something we were a little surprised by in including those questions. I think the idea was essentially we were trying to gauge whether older workers were taking advantage of more flexible schedules, were able to, you know, maybe better balance family or caregiving responsibilities. But what we really found was that younger workers were much more likely to ask for flexible schedules, to ask for work from home options. And in talking to folks, the responses we tended to get tended to shape kind of a view of younger folks and maybe older folks just look at work differently. And this, in some senses, as I talked, especially older respondents weren't terribly surprised by this. For younger folks, this work-life balance, this flexible schedule, this ability to work from home is all they've ever known. For other generations, the concept of work to them is going into the office, going into a job, doing that every day, maybe trying to get less out of your company and trying to just kind of keep your head down into your job. It seemed to be there was a generational split there, it seemed.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Brian Roach. And welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm Brian Roach from WGAL News 8, sitting in today for Scott Lamar. We invite you to check out upcoming topics for Smart Talk at WITF.org/Smart Talk. And you can see some of the shows that we're working on. See what's coming up at WITF.org, /Smart Talk. Today we're talking about delaying retirement. And one of our guests today is Dr. Noel Ballantyne from Penn State Hershey Medical Center. Doctor, to pick up on what Andy Sorgel was just talking about in terms of older workers not needing accommodations, what's your reaction to that? Do older workers want to feel more valued in the workplace, thus they don't want to be seen out of the office, or do they just have more time on their hands? Trick question.
Yeah. I think a lot of older folks continue to work largely because of socialization. I mean, there are 100 reasons why people continue to work. But, going to the workplace is something that's been on, their plate for a long, long time, and it's the normal thing to do. Younger folks tend to socialize much differently than older folks. We all know that. You know, with all the media involved nowadays. So I think part of it is just habit. You do what you've always done and what you get your positive feedback from.
Yeah. And Andy, that gets me back to you. How let's talk about culture in the workplace with the younger workers and the older workers. Did you sense any animosity between the two age groups there, the older versus the younger? They think that the younger workers think the older workers are holding positions they're entitled to?
Well, as we talked about, there was some there certainly seemed to be more. I'm not sure if animosity would be the right word, but there were more negative feelings about the older workforce from younger folks than I think vice versa. I think what one of the more interesting findings we discovered on this related to age discrimination, and so about half of respondents said they thought older workers were always or often discriminated against, but among younger folks. About as many respondents, it was about 43%, 44% of respondents believed that younger workers were always or often discriminated against because of their age. And that might be being forced to take an unpaid internship, sticking to entry-level jobs. But it was interesting to see that among our younger respondents, they were about as likely to say that older workers faced discrimination as they were to say that they themselves and their age group also faced age discrimination.
Andy's only with us a few more minutes. Andy, part of this survey also touched on older workers being, I guess, again, for lack of a better term, I'll say forced out after the age of 50 or 55. How big of a concern was that for those folks who were surveyed?
Well, certainly for the folks that it was happening to, it was a big issue. So we didn't specifically ask about what led folks out of the workforce in the interviews and some of the writing that I've done. I've spoken with a lot of folks about it. And sure, there certainly is data out there that suggests that it's a lot harder to land a job if you're over the age of 50 or if you're over the age of 60 than if you're younger. And so, you know, I've talked to a lot of folks who frankly were surprised that they'd had, successful careers all their lives. There were layoffs or they were let go. And they tried to get back into the market, and they found it a lot harder than they used to. And that's certainly an unfortunate situation. I spoke with a number of folks who left for a medical reason, whether that was I focused one specific story on dementia diagnoses. I focused others on some other different types of medical reasons why you'd be out of the workforce. That's an unfortunate bit too, because as we all know, healthcare isn't exactly cheap. And if you're leaving your job before you're financially prepared to do so, it's not a great day for you. So we found folks for a variety of reasons may not have been able to work as long as they'd be able to. But certainly, when folks do find themselves out financially and kind of emotionally, it's a really serious problem.
Aren't the majority of American workers now above the age of 50?
That population has certainly grown. Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know that the majority are above the age of 50, but the population is growing. That's the fastest segment of the workforce. In fact, in certain areas, particularly those that have been hit pretty hard by the opioid crisis, the influx of 50, even 65-year-old, the growth that we see there, is helping replace these so-called prime age workers that would in generations past have occupied those jobs. In some sense, the older population is propping up areas where there simply aren't enough younger workers to keep things moving.
Andy, one last question for you before I let you go. Do you see this trend of older workers continuing to grow? I mean, I'm in this age group. I'm a baby boomer. I think I'm going to work for quite a while yet, well past my retirement
sure.
age. Do you see this age group continuing to grow in the workforce?
I certainly think as folks live longer and particularly as folks are healthier later into life, I certainly do think that this is something that may continue to grow. I mean, medically, at a certain point, and certainly, I may not be the best guest to talk about this, but at a certain point, there probably will be a cap on how long folks can actually remain in the workforce. If you're living to 90 years old and you're a construction worker, your job is probably going to have to be retooled in some capacity if you want to remain in the workforce for your entire life. But no, I certainly think this is not a trend that's going away anytime soon, and I wouldn't... Much of it, I think, today has been talked about in terms of pessimism. There are certainly folks who enjoy their jobs and are working longer, and they're optimistic about this. So it isn't necessarily something I'd view with optimism or pessimism. It's a demographic trend that I don't think is going away anytime soon, and you know, is probably something that that folks, in terms of finances, in terms of lifestyles, probably need to start getting comfortable with.
Andy Sorgel is a fellow with the AP NORC, the National Opinion Research Center for Public Affairs Research, based in Chicago. I want to thank you for joining us today, Andy. I know you have to go on your way, but you've got us off to a great discussion here this morning. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Ballantyne, Andy gave us a lot to chew on there. You nodding your head as well, as Rick was before. Let's drill down a little bit on the physical and mental challenges that these workers who are staying in the workplace, myself included. Mm-hmm. What's the principal thing you try to get across to people to stay healthy if you're going to continue the marathon?
Right. Well, as you look at individual patients, very frequently you can see the people who are living a successful life to get healthy. Mm-hmm. They're clearly exercising more. They're eating properly. Those are probably the two single most important things that get people older. I mean, if you don't have good genes, you may not make it. If something catastrophic hits you, you won't make it. Mm-hmm. Those things clearly come up. But the things that we have a handle on are exercise, good nutrition, socialization, trying to maintain your cognition. As Andy said, health issues can sneak up on people. If you look at the 65-year-old demographic, about 5 or 6% of them have cognitive impairment. That increases by 5% every 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to impinge on a fair number of people who don't necessarily see it coming when they're around the time when they're beginning to think about retirement.
Rick, taking all these things into consideration, and obviously we don't want any names here, but how many times have you seen retirement plans change radically for good reasons or bad reasons, like a health situation?
Well, off the top of my head, I would say at least half the time. There's reasons why those plans change. And certainly health issues, not only of the person who's planning to retire, but of their spouse. Something happens with their spouse, and they need to retire early in order to be a caregiver. I also see this with parents, people who are baby boomer age, and then they have parents who are in their upper 80s, and they need care, and that their parents can't afford to pay for care on their own, are retiring earlier than what they would have retired on their own just to care for their parents.
You're not seeing people pushing off retirement, though? Lately, unless in the last 2 to 3 years?
Well, as we talked before the show, my view is a little myopic just because the people that come to me for our services generally are already financially or pretty well on their way for so the financial aspect of it then is already taken care of, or at least we've got that part handled. And then my concern is, are they ready, as Dr. Ballantyne talked about, socially, physically, or are they ready? How much of their identity has come from their jobs, and do they have things that they want to do? So one of the things I advise people think about retirement, you need to have the first year planned. You don't need to plan every minute, but what are you going to do? You don't want to retire with nothing to do, because the life expectancy goes down pretty dramatically if you don't have anything to do. So what does that look like? And I also encourage people, particularly in today's economy with the workforce as tight as it is, talk to your employer about can you work part-time? Can you cut back, and so that you have the opportunity to be able to travel and do some things that you would plan to do in retirement without actually cutting the cord completely? I think a lot of employers are open to that, or as you were talking with Andy about being able to even do it work from home.
You mentioned something about delaying retirement. And I'm sorry, I totally lost my train of thought there. Totally lost my train of thought. Dr. Ballantyne, let me bounce back to you. You talked about planning to live a longer life. Not to make this about me, but a couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, I had a situation I had to make some lifestyle changes for my diet. And I feel it's paid off really well. How late is too late to make those changes? I mean, I was probably in my, I'm going to say, late 40s, mid-40s at that time. Again, I felt it's done me a world of good. Too late to change it? 65, 50? What's the age?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of little differences there. Some people really can change at 65 or 70. I tell my patients, during your 60s up to 70, 75, if you're not going to get in good shape, you're not going to do it. Once you get to be 75 or 80, you really can only maintain. You're not going to get better. So you better do it now. Mm-hmm. But having said that, the earlier you start, the better. I mean, if you think about it, 20, even 30-year-olds routinely exercise in general. It's a big part of socialization of young people. Around 30s, 40s, people start getting settled down in their jobs. They stop taking care of themselves. Their waistline goes up. They've established some bad habits for themselves. And then it takes a lot of work, a lot of willpower to get back on track.
How important, you've mentioned mental and emotional health several times. How important is that versus physical health? Are they 50-50? Is there an equal balance? But to hear you talking about mental and emotional health, the sense of belonging, a sense of still making a contribution,
right.
Can we underestimate the value of that?
You know, it took me a long time in my career to understand how very important socialization is. I can give you an anecdote that I had that changed my view of things. My mother was failing. My brothers and I both saw it. We put her in an assisted living environment, sort of against her will, but she was going downhill. Within months, she started gaining weight. She began to paint again. My mother was a good painter. She took on some other stuff. The only intervention was socialization. Mm-hmm. I see 80-year-olds who are wasting away. A lot of them are widows, mm-hmm. and they're living independently. They want to be living the way they are, but they're losing contact with people, and they're declining mentally and physically.
And Rick, that gets me back to my question that I spaced out on just a second ago. I know several people who have retired, and they enjoy it for about a month or two. And, I have all this great free time. And then exactly what Dr. Ballantyne is talking about, I can't sit here every day. I need to go back and do something. I need to get a part-time job. What happens to people? What happens to their retirement plans? What advice do you have for people who say, I don't necessarily need the money, but I want to get back out there. But the money could change their plans and affect their taxes? Question mark?
Certainly the money would have an impact on that and what you can do once you're retired. If you retire with just barely enough to cover the monthly minimum, you know, you're not going to have money for traveling. You're not going to have money for playing golf or activities or things that cost money. So certainly there needs to be a budget for that. And just to kind of piggyback on what Dr. Ballantyne was saying, as I think about clients that we've helped retire, the ones that are happiest in retirement and enjoy retirement are those that have great social connections. They are involved in clubs. They are involved in activities with friends that they do on a regular basis. I can think of one off the top of my head who travels all the time, and she has a group of friends that they travel, and they do it on a budget, and it's almost kind of a game to see how inexpensively they can travel. That's part of the appeal. Whether they can afford it or not is not the issue. It's just part of what they do. And they're very happy and well-adjusted in retirement. Those that don't have anything to do are going to be miserable. And possibly going back to work is one of the ways to have something to do.
I guess my more pointed question is, can this affect your tax situation? Obviously, it probably could.
Well, there's all kinds of tax strategies that go into when you retire, when you draw Social Security, and those type of things, certainly. And certainly, and that's an important consideration. I don't know if it's the most important consideration. Once you get to the point where you're financially independent, I can afford to retire if I want to retire. Now, do I want to becomes a little more complicated than just the tax issues and Social Security.
Dr. Ballantyne, I'm going to get a little personal with you. I'm not going to say how old you are, even though I know. I'll let you, if you want to do that, you can do that. Are you entertaining the thought of retirement? And if so, why not?
It's a good question.
Why or why not, I should say.
Well, it's changed over the last couple of years. 2 years ago, I thought I would be ready to retire. In the meantime, my job description has changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've been working for 20 years to try to get geriatrics firmly established at Hershey Medical Center. And in the last couple of years, we've been able to get additional faculty members to join me, and it's changed everything. Having a bunch of people to work with, we just got a geriatric fellowship in place, which has been a long-term goal of mine. Now I don't want to leave because I feel like I have a lot to give to that program in particular.
You feel like you'd leave a lot on the table?
Experience? Yeah, I definitely would, and I'd like to pass that on. I'd like to see it, you know, firmly established and ready to go on without me. Mm-hmm. And I see that maybe as a 4 or 5 year horizon. So, you know, what was a 1 year horizon now has turned into a 5 year horizon, largely because I see that I still have vital things that I can do.
So it's not a money issue for you, and I'm not going to get into your finances, but you feel you still have a lot to give to your profession.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rick, same question for you. Mm-hmm. I know you've built this very successful business in Lancaster County. What do you want to do? Are you thinking about it? Are you... He's got his finger to his chin. He's really thinking about this, folks.
I think about it all the time. Do I want to retire? Do I want to stop working? No. I love what I do. And to a large extent, my situation is probably similar to Dr. Ballantyne's. There's things that I know that I can do that I can pass on to the firm and to the younger generation. And I'm excited about the young people that have joined our organization and are just getting started on their careers and what I can help them with. The thing that I think about is that I'm healthy, my wife is healthy, and I have seen so many situations where people have put it off, even though financially they could do it. They were in similar circumstances. They like what they do. They want to continue to do it. And then one of them, something happens to their health, and the things that they had dreamed about doing in retirement, now physically they can't do, mm-hmm. or it changes. And so is there a way for me to do both? Some of the things from retirement, work a lot less, be at the office a lot less, and so that's kind of my vision, how that evolves. So it's not a matter of, at this age, we're going to pull the trigger and I'm not going to work. It's how much am I going to work over the next 3 years? How much less am I actually going to be spending in the office in the 3 years after that, and so on. So kind of a gradual thing, not for financial reasons, just because we're healthy now. Let's take advantage of that and do some of the things that we've talked about doing while we know that we can, because 10 years from now, we may not be able to.
I know you well enough to say I see you nowhere near a rocking chair in the next few years.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Brian Roach. And welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm Brian Roach from WGAL News 8, sitting in today for Scott Lamar. Today we are talking about delaying retirement and a few other topics we have yet to get to today. One hot button issue. Social Security. A lot of talk about this. You hear the word entitlement related to that. People get upset about that. But let's ask Rick Rogers, what percentage of Social Security should make up my retirement formula? And touch this if you want. Is it going to be there for me in a couple of years?
Okay. Well, let's take the should out of that question. What Social Security reports is that for people who are retired or on Social Security because they're retired, not because they're disabled, that Social Security on average makes up about a third. And that was the original intent, I believe, back in 1935, that Social Security would be a third and that your pension would be a third and then personal savings would make make up a third of your income. And so as of the most recent data from Social Security, which I think was 2016, about a third. And is that the magic formula, going back to your should part of that, should it be? Well, let me talk about the second part of your question, which was, is it going to be there for us? Well, Social Security is not on sound financial footing. We've known that for years, and we have lacked the political will to make any meaningful changes to it. But if they make changes to Social Security, they could make small changes now and make it solvent, extending retirement age, changing the formula. Right now, it's based on 35 years average wages. If they made it 40 years, little things like that could change, could be changed to make it solvent. So I would say to people who are 50 and older, it's highly unlikely that there would be any changes to Social Security that would change what your projected benefit is now. For people who are under 50, the changes are probably going to be you're going to have to work a little bit longer to get full benefits, and that's what's most likely. Again, that's just my opinion. For people who are over 50, the only thing that may change that would affect them would be what they've done with Medicare, which is that it's now means tested. So if your income is for a couple of joint filers over $170,000, if your gross income is over $170,000, you pay more for your Medicare premium than what everybody else does. And there's a couple of different stages where it continues to go up. I can envision easily where something like that would be applied to Social Security. So some kind of means testing that if you're over $170,000, your benefits get reduced by 10% or 20% and so on. So that really only affects a very small part of the population, those who have the means, in which case Social Security would probably be a smaller portion of what their income is.
But if I'm under the age of 50, I should start considering alternative plans.
Well, I get asked this all the time related to tax law and so forth. And the way we plan at my firm is we plan and project based on the way the law is now. There's so many what ifs. What are interest rates going to be? What is inflation that can affect your projections? And we just want to make sure that we're on the right track. So with what I'm saving now, with when I want to retire, with the amount of income I think I'm going to need, and with Social Security laws the way they are right now, am I on track? And as we move towards that date when you're going to actually stop working, we keep making adjustments to that. So I would not let, I would not say to young people to start really making dramatic plans, changes to your plans. What you need to concentrate on is savings. So just like with what Dr. Ballantyne said, the sooner you start on your health, the better. The sooner you start saving for retirement, the better. There was a recent survey that was put out by, I think Stanford University had done it in 2017, that says if you're 25, you need to save 10 to 17% of your income. Mm-hmm. If you want to retire at 65 and maintain the same lifestyle. If you wait to 35, now you need to save 15 to 21% of your income. So every 10 years that you're waiting, or every year that you're waiting, you're going to have to save a lot more to get to the same place.
But the best laid financial plans can be turned over with one major health problem. Dr. Ballantyne, how many times have you seen that happen to a patient where all of a sudden their life is turned upside down, their retirement plans change because themselves or a spouse are adversely affected?
It's hard to put a number on it, but it's frequent. I think two things happen. One is something comes totally out of the blue, and you can't see that coming necessarily. An accidental injury, a major health problem. The other is a chronic illness creeping up on people, and that's probably an area where we can make a lot of changes if we intervene aggressively, mm-hmm. which means both on the physician end, but also the patient end, changing lifestyle, following instructions, things like that. You can't help a calamity necessarily. A Mack truck could hit any one of us. When we have chronic illnesses, which are the major reason for disability in the United States at this point, as opposed to infection, for example. Which we have largely controlled. those are things that people can do something about.
Do you see people living longer into the future? We've got, you know, I guess we'd all be considered baby boomers,
right.
Most of us. We've had a lot of good nutrition, better nutrition the past couple of years. A lot of food safety issues have been addressed in the past couple of years. Do you see people living even longer? Do you see retirement age getting pushed back or changing from a medical standpoint?
Personally, I'm afraid that we are maxing out right now. I'm afraid of nutrition. I think nutrition has gone the wrong way in the last couple of years.
Really?
We've got too much processed foods. We really need to get back to better food. In Pennsylvania, I mean, we are incredibly fortunate that we have so much good produce available to us. But just look around us at you know, fast food and that. I have people who eat multiple meals per week at a fast food place, and the nutrition just is not as good. Obesity is a huge problem in the United States. It's going to become a major, major health issue as people get to be 50 and 60 years old, and their knees and their hips are starting to go for the second time.
Uh-huh. So here I am thinking that we're having better food. You're saying that's not the case.
I think we had the best food in the 60s, 70s, maybe beginning of 80s. And I think there it started to turn around.
That's when my mother made those good meals for me.
Yeah. I think we can fix it. I think we just don't have the societal push to actually fix it. But I think we could fix it. I think there are some efforts in that direction. And let's hope that we can continue to push that. But again, nutrition is hugely, hugely important. And it ought to be part of everybody's health care plan.
Good nutrition is hard, isn't it? I mean, my wife and I try to make nutritious meals, and it's work.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is much easier to go through the drive-through,
yep.
Much quicker and easier, but it's work. People just don't want to do that work.
I think people, you know, have their eyes on a lot of other things right now, as opposed to, well, you know, we don't have nuclear families the same way. People don't sit down to a meal together the same way that they did 20, 30 years ago. Everybody's going off in different directions. I think that impinges on it. That's not to say that we can't figure this out. There are ways to make good nutrition easier and faster.
Just work at it.
You do have to work at it.
Rick, let's get back to the numbers. My wife and I had this discussion last week. How much of our current income are we going to need in retirement? I've been pondering that question. I'm sure you've heard that a million times. So 100% of my income now, what percentage of that do I need to live comfortably in retirement? This would obviously be a question for people under the age of 50, because if you haven't planned by now over the age of 50, not too much you can do about it. What would you tell people? 80%, 60%, half of it? What would you say?
I tell people 100% of their take home. So when I'm planning for somebody, a prospective client who is coming to meet with us and have a plan put together, where we start is with their take home pay. So if you're if you have a paycheck and whatever those dollars are per pay, annualize that and look at that dollar amount. That would be my target, and the adjustments to that then would be. In the past year, have you actually lived on that income? Did you accumulate debt in the last 12 months? Did you save money out of that? Because typically your take-home pay is after your 401k and after all those deductions, and of course it's after taxes. So now I want a net number, and then are you living to that? Are you able to do that? The things that you enjoy doing? Were you able to travel? Were you able to do your pastimes? And that should be the target for anybody planning to retire. Now, if we are 1 year away from retirement and that number doesn't work out, mm-hmm. Now we need to start adjusting that number. But if I'm 5 years away from retirement, I want to target 100% of what I have now. I may not need that all once I retire. It depends on what my lifestyle is going to be afterwards. But we should at least plan for that. And what I have seen personally with people who have retired, that the first 10 years of retirement, most people spend about the same amount of money that they spent when they were working. They spend it in different ways, mm-hmm. But they spend about the same amount. After 10 years of retirement now, we've kind of done some of the things that we wanted to do or some projects that we have taken on. And then, depending on health and healthcare expenses, their spending starts to go down. So at least for that first 10 years, you should plan on spending the same amount.
When I'm planning for retirement, we have about 5 minutes left, by the way. Should I include long-term care as a separate part of my retirement plan, or is that considered to be part of the retirement package that you're planning?
That should be budgeted into it. We advise clients who have, I think the number is about $3 million of savings at that point and above, that maybe they can self-insure. And I say maybe because everybody's kind of different and depends on the stability of your income. Somebody who's retiring and they've got two great pensions and they're not drawing Social Security till they're 70, maybe they don't need as much because now they got a pretty good income, even without their assets. But somebody that's less than $3 million, long-term care should be planned for and should be budget put into your retirement budget.
So, Dr. Ballantyne, as a medical professional, I have to ask you, how much, if at all, should people plan for long-term care?
I would say two things. One, clearly they need to have the financial wherewithal to do it. I have many, many patients who have not taken care of their finances well, and they are stuck in their home when they should be in some sort of assisted living environment. We don't necessarily have in-home caregivers for everybody anymore, so you have to be financially secure to be able to do that. That's the one part of it. The other I get back to over and over again, and this is what I spend 75% of my career doing, is trying to get people to avoid disability as long as they possibly can, so they only have a short period of their life where they are disabled. And that means taking care of chronic illness, which, you know, all the things we've been talking about before come into play. And there's big bang for the buck there. If you can delay going into, some sort of assisted living environment for a year, 18 months, that is a big percentage of your life expectancy when you're 85 years old.
Before we finish up here, I think we need to spend a little more time on the mental and emotional aspect of preparing for this. My stepmother passed away from Alzheimer's, and I saw her how music and old memories stimulated her. I guess my question to you is, as we get older, and you touched on this before, I want to get you to repeat it. That mental stimulation, are we underestimating that in terms of aging well?
I certainly have through my career missed that for a long time. As I take care of older and older folks, I realize that mental stimulation is just hugely important to well-being.
Playing an instrument, puzzles, what would you put in that category?
I think human contact is more important than anything.
Really?
Anything you can do to stimulate your brain is useful. But being around people is going to get you a lot farther. And that's why I've gotten more aggressive about shifting people over to assisted living when they start to fail in their home. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a failure at all. It's a form of socialization, forced socialization.
And do you see people bounce back with that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I talked to a lady yesterday trying to convince her it's time to do it. And as I look back over 35 years of my career, I have not had one patient yet regret making that move. The transition is very painful. It's very hard. But once you do it, in 6 months, nobody says it was the wrong thing.
Okay, we have about 1 minute. Gentlemen, I want to just ask you for your final thoughts. Rick, what final advice would you give to people about considering changing their retirement time, when they're going to retire?
Well, I will pass on this words of wisdom that was given to me earlier in my career. Back when 65 was old, I had a client who was in his 80s, and I would never have guessed that. He looked great, and one day I said to him, Bill, you look fantastic. I said, what's the secret, that you're in your 80s and you look so good? He said, always have a reason to get up the next morning. So do not go to bed unless you have planned at least to do something the next day. Always have something to look forward to. And if you're always looking forward to something, you'll get up. And if you have no reason to get up one day, you just won't.
And Dr. Ballantyne, that sounds like your major message to us today.
Pretty much. Do what you love.
And do it well, and look forward to doing it. All right, Rick Rogers with Rogers & Associates in Lancaster, and Dr. Noel Ballantyne, thank you very much. This was a great discussion. I'm glad we had it. I needed it because I'm looking at that in just a few years. And we want to thank you, our audience members, for joining us today. I'm Brian Roach from WGAL News 8, sitting in today for Scott Lamar. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF.